Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's music row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Pushkin. Just a quick note here. You can listen to all of the music mentioned in this episode on our playlist, which you can find a link to in the show notes. For licensing reasons, each time a song is referenced in this episode, you'll hear this sound effect. All right, enjoy the episode.
Not long ago, I was having dinner with some old family friends. They have two daughters in their early 20s, Joanna and Annalie. Joanna and Annalie are serious music people, super serious. So I said to them, if you could invite anyone, anyone on Broken Record, who would it be? And they both answered, Pentatonix. Not Beyonce, not Adele, not a reincarnated Elvis Presley, Pentatonix, an a cappella group from Arlington, Texas that got its start on YouTube. That, I'm going to guess, most people over the age of 30 have never heard of. So what did we do? Well, we invited Pentatonix on Broken Record, of course, where I have to admit I fell in love with them, even though I'm twice their age. My name is Malcolm Gladwell. You're listening to Broken Record.
I'm Matt.
I'm Kirsten.
I'm Mitch.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Kevin.
And we are Pentatonix. And our name is based off the pentatonic scale, which goes like this.
Da, 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 and on and on and on.
Yeah. Pentatonix. Matt Sally, bass vocals. Kirsten Maldonado, mezzo-soprano. Mitch Grassi, tenor. Scott Hoying, baritone. And Kevin Olushola, beatboxer. Five members representing the five notes in the pentatonic scale. They're an incredibly charismatic group of 20-somethings who met in high school in Texas. They started out by uploading a cappella covers of pop songs on YouTube, and now they have 16 million followers. But they really hit the big time when they earned a spot on NBC's The Sing-Off and won. And now, seven Pentatonix albums later, I got to meet with the group at GSI Studios in New York, along with friend of the show, public radio journalist, and my co-host for this episode, Daisy Rosario. By the way, they showed up early for the interview. In the history of rock and roll, no band has ever been early for an interview. They may even have walked from their hotel. I have no idea. Mitch was wearing the coolest coat I've ever seen, And before the show, I hung out with Kevin, who turns out went to Yale, speaks Chinese, is half West Indian like me, and I feel like we could have just done a second show with Kevin riffing. They have a 50-city tour of arenas coming up this spring, but I don't think of Pentatonix as rock stars. There's something way better. We all got acquainted. Then they agreed to give Daisy and me a little demonstration of how their songs come together.
That's basically the how it happens. It's kind of a simple formula.
So that, but that song, okay, now, on the degree of difficulty scale, where, if one is dead easy and 10 is like insanely hard, where is that?
That one's probably one of the easier ones. Definitely. A three or two.
Is it three? All right. Yeah. Can you give us a five? Let's work up the scale.
Let's work up the scale.
Five. Well, in terms of complexity, would be like a six or seven.
Before we go there, why is that? You said that was a three. Why is that a three? What's easy about it?
Because a lot of the background parts are really repetitive. Bum, 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 bum. And then other songs are like all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so the next one up is going to be
it's like a five. Uh-huh, yeah. Because that one's a little bit tougher, but not too hard. Should we start just at the beginning?
La, la, la. La, 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 la. Yes, yeah, that's it.
Ha, ha,
yeah.
Ha, ha. And then right after, maybe.
Yeah, just start right there.
And then we end right before your solo.
Sure. Yeah,
or do like a line of your solo, and then we'll just like cut it off randomly.
Okay, cool. So one, two, one.
Why is that? Tell me specifically why that's a little harder.
The background parts are kind of playing off of each other to form one singular rhythm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, if you get off, you're off. Right. You know, you have to hold down your part. Yeah.
Wait, is it harder if the song is slow? Is your job harder if the song is just
for different reasons?
Breath
yeah.
support, maybe.
Yeah, slow songs can fall out of tune faster because we're holding long notes and they can start to be, the tonal center can be like lost. But fast songs, it can be just hard accuracy wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And each song is hard in a different way for each individual person too. Like the first, like even just for the Christmas show, for example, the first half is so hard for me and then everyone's like, oh, that's the easy part for me. And I'm like, oh. But it just depends on the person as well.
Because that song we just did is really tough for you, I feel like. Well, you are good.
Or one of the
most. Yeah, it is tough. There are especially parts later on where the beat's like, what's up? Like you're just going everywhere, so I have to think a lot. But yeah, that one we've done a lot of times. I think God Rest is probably even a better example of like more difficulty. Seven or eight, because it's just
okay. We're gonna get to there, but wait, what happens when you make a mistake?
Like keep on trying.
No, I'm thinking. I'm looking at you, Kevin. You just said there's a part of that song that's really hard.
Sure.
What if you blow it? Does it throw it? If you make a little error, does it throw everyone else off?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you just keep going. And thankfully, to be honest, I think there's a mystique and magic about beatboxing where nobody really knows that I've made a mistake. So I just keep going. And like, seriously, there are times where I've drunk too much water and then I might burp, but then I'm like, oh, it's a beatbox sound. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's that mystique that kind of helps me out in that way where people don't know. I think it's a lot more obvious if they make a mistake.
Yeah, and to speak on that, yeah.
Oh yeah,
to speak on that, Kevin's really good at covering. So like, because at the rhythm section thing, we'll play off of each other. Exactly. And, you know, we're the foundational thing. So I'll hear him a lot of times like mess up, but he'll like come back in on a different syncopated rhythm. So it's really cool, and I geek out over that kind of stuff. So it's so cool. Like when he messes up, he doesn't mess up. So basically, he doesn't mess up.
It's like good jazz. It's like, oh, they make a mistake, and then you're like, oh no, it was purposeful. It's like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, cool.
That's character. Okay,
that's
sure.
Funny.
Wait, okay. So the next level up was you had mentioned a song.
God rest
would probably be like an 8 to 10.
Yeah. Okay. Where do you want to go from?
We should do let's go.
So wait, before you start, why? What's hard about this? I want to listen for it now this time.
This one.
It's pretty quick.
It's very quick. Yes. And the notes are all over the place for all of us. And then there's like this, I don't even know how to describe it.
I mean, I would say this one is much more based off of classical music. So there's a lot of like counterpuntal melodies that are going in and out. So each thing has this very distinct part. But then if you get off, it makes it a lot harder to come back in. So I think that's why we liked it, because we wanted it to be something intricate where people say, I would never hear this anywhere.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Bethlehem. Oh yeah.
That's true.
That's how though.
So start. Oh, starting. Right, you want to start there and then go through, or you start with dum 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 dum, and then go to your thing.
Oh, I wanted to.
Oh, let's do that. Okay, and then we do it again. Dum 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 dum, and then end.
And then end. Yeah.
Okay. So gotcha. Dum dum dum. One. One.
Oh wow. Wait. Now. Okay. Now. Is there, of that little bit you just did, are there specific, is there a specific part that is the most challenging? Or is it all sort of equal? You don't get nervous when you're about to come to one specific part of that song.
Not really.
I feel like once we learned that one's not nerve-wracking anymore. Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting thing. It was challenging to learn, and it was a scary feat to take on. But now that we know it and have sung it so many times, I'm never really nervous about a part. There are songs where I will get like nervous about it every single time, but that's actually not one of them. Like Hallelujah, or like one of our ballads where there's a high part.
Do you guys get nervous about the same things, or do you each have your own idiosyncratic nerves?
That's a really good question.
Oh, yeah. We probably have our own.
Yeah. We have our own, I think, yeah.
I get nervous about lyrics, because I forget the
yeah.
lyrics all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes, actually, maybe I don't want to jinx it. I'll say it anyway. Sometimes you feel like you're about to forget something, and then right when it happens, you remember it because of muscle memory.
And your stomach
and
drops.
And your stomach drops and your heart is pounding and you're like, I can't believe that just happened.
It's the worst feeling in the world.
So we have three prompters on our stage, just in case.
You'll be like, I don't know what's happening.
When you said you get nervous sometimes when you're learning a song, it seems overwhelming at first. How long does it take you to learn a song? What's the learning process look like?
It really depends on the song. So I mean, for example, we've done these Evolution covers, right? It's where we do a person's career, or we do evolution of music, like he was about to say. It's where we do, I mean, we've done, I think, from Gregorian chants up to now. And I think depending on how many songs and the difficulty of the arrangement, it takes us different amounts of time to learn. There's some songs that we can learn pretty easily. I think Problem by Ariana Grande, we did that in a very, very short period of time. Evolution of Music, I mean, it probably took us a week plus. But it was funny because that one, we learned it and then we actually did it for a TV show. So we had to redo it and learn it very last minute.
Oh,
remember that?
I remember that.
We were going to be on Ellen. And so we had to relearn it. And so the next day we performed it and it was just
a totally different version.
It was very, very difficult. So I think when you have those situations, when you have to learn something very, very fast and it's intricate, that's when your mind gets muddled a little bit.
Yeah.
And we usually learn everything on our own and then come to rehearsal and then. If we all have it learned, it comes together pretty quickly, actually, as a group.
That's interesting. That completely surprises me. So in the beginning, you might pick a song and then you will all go off on your own. And is it obvious to you what your piece of it is?
Well, sometimes we'll arrange in person and then we're kind of learning it as we're arranging it. But then more often we'll just kind of have ideas and then arrange it with our arranger. And then we have sheet music and like a MIDI track for each of us. And we'll just kind of learn our part. You can hear their parts in the MIDI track, and then we'll just kind of come having it learned.
We'll be back with more from Pentatonix after this break. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Chris Christopherson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss-Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segee, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
We're back with more Pentatonics and a question from my co-host this episode, journalist Daisy Rosario.
From beginning to end, let's say if you weren't touring, if you weren't doing everything, but you were just preparing between purposely trying to pick some songs, creating the arrangements, then learning, how long is that process?
I think once again, it really depends. It depends on our timeline. It depends on how focused we are on the project. Compared, you know, if we're on tour, it might take us longer because we want to save our voices. I remember we actually did Evolution of Music, or at least the pre-arrangement of it. And when we say pre-arrangement, it means picking the songs, kind of getting rough ideas of what the song's going to sound like. I
truly believe, though, if you were like, you have completely free time, how long would it take? We could do an entire song in a day.
I think so too, yeah.
I agree with that.
If we got up in the morning and picked the song and then arranged it with Ben, that would take a few hours. And then each record our part or like learn it, I feel like we could do it in a day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How does decision-making work in your group?
It's actually really cool and organic. Yeah. We just all just bring an idea when we have it. We talk about it. If we're all inspired and you can feel the momentum, then we just go with it. But there's no like voting process or anything.
And you don't have you because you have no. It's not like the Rolling Stones where like Mick is saying we're doing this and everyone else is, and Ron Wood is saying okay.
Right.
It's like,
no, it's pretty democratic.
Yeah. And if you see multiple members excited, even if you're not as inspired, you'll be like, okay, let's go with it because they're excited and. And then see where it goes.
Do you have five of you? Do you have very divergent tastes in music?
For sure.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what the kind of span is. Actually, Matt, why don't you start?
I grew up on a lot of musical theater, like some of us. But I also grew up in like gospel music and contemporary Christian music. Like I was the only allowed to listen to that growing up for a little bit, and then I divulged into musical theater and then kind of jazz. I went to Berklee College of Music, so it was a lot of jazz in that school. And so I have a really eclectic amount of different types of music that I like and enjoy.
Yeah, I would say mine is pretty eclectic as well. I grew up on musical theater and then have been listening to like singer-songwriters like Sarah Bareilles, and I grew up on like Regina Spektor, and then, you know, all the pop female side as well. And then I listen to some electronic music here and there, like James Blake, I really love.
I started in musical theater as well, actually, and was really, really big into that and soundtracks. And I think that's where my pitch accuracy came from, is because I would always emulate musical theater actors, actresses, and they, you know, that's like a big part of musical theater that I really appreciate, is that they were all very, very precise and pitch accurate. And then I moved on to electronic music, and specifically using vocals in electronic music and cutting them up and using them as instruments. And yeah, I still haven't gotten out of that. That's the genre that I think really inspires me the most.
Yeah, I like anything with harmony. I also grew up doing musical theater. That's how we all met. And I love pop R&B. That's like what I listen to. Beyonce and Ariana Grande and Jasmine Sullivan. Anything where it's like pleasurable chords and like happy sounding music, but with soulful vocals is really my vibe.
Yeah. For myself, I grew up on classical music. I play cello. And so, because that's all kind of like him, my parents are very heavily Christian. So that's what we could only listen to in the house, that. And then this radio station called Delilah, which is a lot of soft pop. That's literally like all my
God, Delilah, the queen.
Yeah. That's what we listen to all the time. And then when I kind of went to boarding school and then college, that's when I started learning about more like contemporary pop music. And I started to just take as much of it in as I possibly can.
Were you also involved in musical theater? And
no, I wasn't. Literally, we just did this Wicked special, and that's when I kind of was really my first foray into musical theater, because I didn't really know much about it. And so, but it's truly amazing, like the things that these people do. Oh my gosh, Lord have mercy.
Wait, so what is it about, since four to five of you, 80% of Pentatonix comes out of musical theater, what is it specifically about that world that prepares you for a cappella singing? Would you have been as adept at what you do if you had all just been in bands in high school?
I think it, obviously there's a certain theatrical aspect, and I think a cappella, I don't know what it is. I don't know if a cappella singers just feel like they have to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not compromise, but they have to sort of prove themselves as performers without backing tracks or instruments or anything like that. So it's become a very performative art. And
it also just takes accuracy.
And it takes accuracy,
because you don't have any
too.
Instruments behind you. So if you're flat, then it's like extremely noticeable. And so I think that in musical theater, it's all about pitch accuracy. That's like those are the best singers in the world. And
it's very emotional too. And that's something we all
really
like.
That's true. It's a lot of emotion.
I also think it takes a lot of hard work to be doing 8 shows a week. I was very fortunate to be in Kinky Boots earlier this year, and I learned so many like tricks of the trade from all these people that I was in the cast with, and I took all of that with me into our summer tour and onto this tour as well. And just everyone has just an amazing work ethic. They know when to say no, they know how to take care of their body, and I just it's just really inspiring, because you think, like, you know, we go on a tour, a 2.5 month tour, or this tour, and you know, this Christmas tour, and they can be so grueling, but these people are doing it all year long. Like, there is no stop, and they get one day off, and yes, they can call out, you know, they can take vacation, but that is their life, their entire time. So it takes a lot of work ethic. They have families, they have, you know, so I think that's something also just really beautiful about the craft.
Yeah. Does the, I'm curious about the relationship you have to your audience.
Mm-hmm.
When you do something that's really difficult and demanding that you're really proud of pulling off, do you think your audience realizes how hard it is? Do you think you're appreciated by the casual listener, like the craft of it?
I think they do. I think they do realize how difficult it is and appreciate it. I think that they appreciate more when it feels emotional, whether it's difficult or not. I think they respond more to the emotion of the arrangement than like the complexities. But I do think, especially the nerdier a cappella lovers, really like that.
We also arrange for that. We make sure that we have specific, quote-unquote, impressive moments in our songs, so people will be like, oh, wow, a cappella, I forgot. Yeah. They're doing it live. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm thinking of the A Bohemian Rhapsody,
which
is like, you don't have to know anything about music. You watch the video of you guys doing that, you're like, oh, this is something amazing is going on here. And I don't, you know, so it is kind of, in that case, it really, because the song, I guess, is so, actually talk about that song. That song is, am I right, the song, is that about as demanding a piece of music to do?
That one's a 10 for sure. That one's really hard.
Did you feel like you were taking a risk by trying it?
Yes,
for sure. Very much we were afraid of it for a couple of years.
Yeah, we put it off for 6 years. We talked about doing it for a long time.
Wow, 6 years.
Yeah.
But I think you touched on something that's really important, that it really, the song matters that much, especially for the casual listener, because I think a lot of our fans are music lovers. So they do appreciate a lot of what we do intricately. But the thing is, we also want to reach a wider fan base. So I think it's so important that the song choice is so important, so that people listen to it. They say, I don't even care or know that it's a cappella. I care that this is a song that they're doing, and it makes me feel so good, and I would like to listen to them more. So I think song choice for that reason is so important to us.
Yeah. Can we break down Bohemian Rhapsody for a moment here?
Sure.
Because I'm curious about, first of all, there's so much going on in that song. And I'm curious to know what you think of as being the most interesting parts of that song from your perspective.
I think the middle section of it. the Galileo, that whole part is very interesting because there's dueling choirs, but we have two background parts. so we're literally like, let him go, let me go, let him. We're singing all these parts, and it's almost a little bit ridiculous. Like, if you heard one of us singing our part, it would be hilarious. But
we would do
when
it.
You kind of,
come on.
Like, my part is, Bismillah, no, we will not let you go, let me go. Bismillah, we will not let you go, let me go, we will not let you go. Never, 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 never. Like, that's what I'm doing. Except, like, way higher. I'm screaming these parts.
Wait, as you're doing that, wait, can each of you individually do what you're doing when he's doing that?
It's pretty much the same. We're doing
it. Oh, it's all
harmonies.
Bismillah, we will not let you go, let me go.
Yeah. It is the same, yeah.
And you're like trying to catch a breath at any moment you can. You're like, let it go. Well, now let you go.
Do you ever wonder every time I hear that song, all I can think of is, how on earth did this song get written? Like,
I saw the movie and I was like, every single song, I'm like, what kind of creative genius is this?
Yeah. It's bananas. It's like it comes from a different musical universe.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
What are the songs you've done that you feel have been kind of breakthroughs for you?
Mary, Did You Know is what launched our first Christmas album. And then Hallelujah was huge.
Can you talk? So it's funny, you mentioned Hallelujah. I did one of my podcast episodes on my other podcast. I did a whole episode devoted to that song, talking about all of the different versions over the years. It took 20 years to emerge. The original version is so different from what we've associated. You know, we think of the Buckley, Jeff Buckley version, or we think of the, and I'm just curious how you approach. So there's a song which exists out there in so many done so many different ways in different forms. How did you approach that song? It is a deeply complicated song. Did you have a version you were kind of looking at, or what was the process of putting your own imprint on something like that?
We were trying to find like a beautiful Christmas song to do, actually. We wanted to have a Christmas ballad for the year. And so we wanted to use these Christmas version of Hallelujah with like Christmas lyrics. But then it ended up not working out. We had to use the normal lyrics. And we just like, but we loved the arrangement so much that we were like, let's just put it on the Christmas album. And I don't remember how we stumbled. I mean, it's one of the most famous songs ever written. I think that it was always kind of on our short list of stuff we would eventually do.
When it came to arranging it, I think we approached it very gently and we wanted to make the arrangement very humble, and we didn't really want to do anything insane with it because it's such a beloved song. And you have to be really careful with songs like that, you know what I mean? Right.
I also think what I love about the song, and I rewatched the video the other day and I hadn't seen it in a long time, I love, and like when we're performing it on stage as well, I think everyone's part is very well suited for their strengths, and so it's really like touching and lovely to listen to each person singing the specific lyrics they're doing, written in the way that it is. I think it's very moving and appropriate for all of us, so we all get the chance to shine, and then it all comes together at the end and feels very moving and impactful, besides just being a beautiful song lyrically, you know.
Well, what's interesting about that song is that I've been listening to that song, versions of it, forever and ever and ever. It's a song about when you hear it conventionally, it's one voice, you know, in this kind of, you don't associate it with a group, which is why it's so fascinating to see it reformed in a redone. Can you do a little bit of it?
We can do like the first verse.
Oh, well, I was thinking her verse, and then you get the beatboxing, you get...
There we go.
Yeah, okay. So like,
and we just won't go to the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it okay if I just start crying?
Thank you.
We'll be back with more from Pentatonix, including their recording session with the great Dolly Parton.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Chris Christopherson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true, untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segee, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
We're back with more Pentatonix. I want to talk about the music you write yourself and what's sort of the relationship between your own music and other people's music. How does that, can you talk a little bit about was there a moment when you decided you had to start doing some of your own stuff as well?
Original music?
Yeah.
We definitely decided to do that, and that's why we did our original album. We wanted to kind of branch out and start telling our own stories. Mm-hmm. But we do like love covers so much, so we started doing covers as well. But then more original stuff's coming next year. We like to do it all.
Yeah. So you have another original album coming in 2019.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah.
We're working on it. Yeah. When it comes out, we're not necessarily sure. Because I think the one thing that we learned about the original album process is that to write great songs takes time. And so we really don't want to rush ourselves. The first time we did it, we wrote, 30, 40 songs in maybe like a month and a half. And so that was, and I think it was our first foray into songwriting. So this time we want to give ourselves some time to really say, let's see what stories we really want to tell, what sound really accentuates these stories, and how do we evoke the emotions that we really want to evoke since we've grown so much in 2015.
If you write a acapella song from scratch, do you write it in a different way than if you are writing it for a kind of standard rock and roll band?
That's the debacle, really.
There's multiple ways to do it. You can write it with the arrangement in mind, or I found what works, that's just too much for me to think about. So for me personally, I always just like to write it with a piano or something and just write the song, and maybe some ideas will be inspired by the fact that we're going to do it a cappella, but I just don't want to like get caught up in that.
Yeah, I think, and now I'm really interested to see how the songwriting process goes in the future, because now we've all been writing individual projects for other people as well. So now I feel like initially when we went into the first songwriting situation, it was like, all right, we have to write a really cool song, but it also has to be a cappella. So there were so many limitations already set on it. So I'm interested to see what the new process is, because I think it will be different for everyone just based on, you know, it can't be the same. Everyone's songwriting process is different in general anyway. So,
yeah, or we'll have like a songwriter pitch us a song and it'll be an amazing song, but it's like the production that makes it cool. And I'm like, oh, we're,
and then we're like, well, now I can't do it.
Yeah, it's this crazy drop. Like, right. I was like, I'm not sure that's going to be right for us.
For you guys picking songs and when people approach you, how quickly can you kind of assess like, oh, this is something we'd really be able to hook into versus, oh, actually, that's a nice idea, but it doesn't play to what you do.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten easier as we've done this more. I think in the beginning, I remember even when we were writing original songs, we tried songs. There's one called Love Again where we did like a electronic drop. And then quickly afterward, we realized this just does not work for us. So I think as time has gone and we've tried so much, because in the beginning of any, you know, band startup, if you want to call, you're doing a lot of experimentation. So I think now we've really honed in on being able to say when we're working with songwriters, you know, I don't think this is going to work. But also we do try to let things kind of see how they take form, because sometimes, you know, when we're arranging the original song in our style, we realize, oh wait, there's a way that we can change it for our own purposes. So it kind of really depends, but yeah, it's a fine balance. It's a hard thing.
What does it mean it doesn't work for you? What is that? What?
There's a difference between vocally being able to produce the song as opposed to emulating a sound that is not properly going to be emulated. Does that make sense?
I feel like it's just sweet if it's going to be boring. That's kind of my gauge. Like, we tried to do like this Muse song and it's like so beautiful and we were like, we have to do it. And there's like the mum, mum, mum. It already had kind of a cappella things happening in it. And so we were trying to arrange it, but there's like, it for what they did with it, it worked. But when you put our spin on it, it was hard to make interesting.
Yeah, sometimes it just doesn't translate well.
It was Madness.
Oh,
yeah, because it's kind of like similar melodies over and over, and it just, it's like this slow build and like a ton of belting, and like it would just kind of sound, I don't know how to describe it, lackluster if we did it. And we want to take something and completely flip it on its head and make it special for us instead of just like a worse version of the original.
Exactly. Yeah. The ever helpful worse version. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this one thing that I think we've really learned is that, you know, a lot of producers, whenever you're singing a song, it's focused on the track, how amazing the track is. And I'm not saying like certain production parts that are like drops and stuff like that, but just how cool the track is. That's the bed of the music that they're going to sing.
Dance,
exactly. Yeah. And we realize like that's not something that we do very well. Because I think a lot of what a cappella is the build and the emotion behind the build and transitions. And so we always have to make sure that whenever we're arranging a song or doing a song, like that has to be a very crucial part of that arrangement. And so that I think that's one reason that we can quickly tell whether a song is going to work or not. If the track is great, but we realize there's not going to be a build that allows us to really showcase what we do so well, we scrap it.
Is there a balance that you're looking for? Because one thing that really does strike me when I listen to your covers is like covers are, it's lovely when somebody really like reinterprets a song and makes you hear it in a different way, but that's, you are making me hear it in a different way in one way. And in another way, you are scratching a very satisfying itch, right? Like it's like, yeah. Like there's clearly the recognition of like the elements of whatever the song is and why we love it. I think yes. You guys always nail that still making it sound in a way that highlights what you do. And the same with your voices. I find them to be both, your voices are terribly distinctive and then at the same time can disappear into mimicking, you know, what is familiar about a song that we loved. And there's just, to me, such an interesting tightrope there.
Thank you.
And that's exactly what we tried.
Yeah, that's
to
always
do.
Our first conversation. Yeah. We're like, how can we hold on to what makes this song special? And but also like make it completely different so people won't compare. It's like definitely a balance.
So that's part of the criteria there, is it has to kind of do both.
It's a balance.
Yeah. Act. You don't want to change, you don't want to flip a cover so intensely that people are like, now like, it's low, lost. Now I don't like this like song. It's bad. Right. You want to keep that what the magic was. That's why we chose to even cover it. So, mm-hmm. But again, flip it, make it our own.
When you, Scott, when you were talking about the ones that work are the ones that tap into the emotionality of the song, I'm curious about, what is a difference in, is there a difference in the way that a listener responds to a sound made by an instrument and a sound made by a voice? Is it easier for an a cappella band to tap into the emotionality of something? Is voice more powerful?
That's a really good question. We've never been asked that before. I think it depends on what specifically moves people, but I personally am more moved by vocals because it's more people singing lyrics, it's more people storytelling, and so that moves me. And I'm really moved by harmony, but everyone responds differently to things.
It seems, though, that the majority of people, this is quite a broad statement, I would say, but from what I've gathered and judging by our fan base and what they enjoy, it seems like people really just enjoy vocals, and that really, really moves people emotionally. Even on like American Idol and The Voice, and like people just really tune in and it really moves them.
I also think that people are just really moved by passion. If you're passionately singing, like one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen, this is so random, was at like a Christmas concert, and it was a girl playing violin, and she, just the way she was moving her body and performing was so beautiful to me. It like has stuck with me. And that's the first time I feel like I've always been like, you know, in choir and like moved by the harmonies. And yeah. But I think it's just like, if someone's really passionate about it, it doesn't matter what instrument, you're telling a story, you're storytelling, and that's their voice. In a way, you know.
Yeah, and maybe because we have so many people singing, we have a little bit of a head start
in
making something emotional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about one of my favorite of your songs,
okay.
Which is Jolene, that you
did. Oh, my God.
With
Dolly
Parton. How did that, first of all, Dolly Parton.
I know.
Yes.
Can we just say a few words about how...
A lot of words about Dolly Parton. She is the coolest person in the world.
How did that come about? Is she as awesome as she seems?
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to tell you these stories. She's the best person in the world. It came about in the most random way ever.
Wait, tell me.
So we were working with Cracker Barrel.
Thanks, Cracker Barrel.
And so was she.
Shut up.
At the same time, just randomly, and then they kind of brought us together, and we're like, do you want to do a medley with her? And we were like, we'd love to do a medley. All our songs are iconic, but maybe we just do Jolene, because that would be so epic. And she was like, I'm down for whatever. I'll be there. And then we went to the studio and showed up. It was like 7:30 a.m. was our call time. We walk in with like breakfast and sweats,
trembling.
Like not awake yet. She's in full glam. They're 30 minutes early, makeup, hair, outfit. She's like, I'm ready when y'all are.
Exactly.
She's just, I was like, you are amazing. And we changed a few things in the song. And we were
what did you change?
So we shortened it, and like less space between the verses, yeah. Just little tiny things. We were singing it with her, and then she was messing up because she's used to doing her version
right.
For the last 50 years. And we were horrified, and I was like, we can change it back. I'm so sorry we ruined your masterpiece. I was like, having an anxious meltdown. And she was like, no, I want to learn y'all's version. And she was taking notes and learning this new version. I mean,
like the best attitude the entire time.
The best attitude, so happy, mm-hmm. And like... loving it. And then she was like, this is the best version I've ever heard of this song. I love you guys. Like, I want to work with y'all again. It was so cool.
Wait, the video I saw, was that that would have been I think it was the official video. Is that a live performance that you're doing? Where she gives you the, where she does a low five at the end of the song with you guys? Do you know that one?
So what we did is we went into the studio and we did sing it in one take. And then we filmed the video. So
oh,
it is a live take,
right,
but
right.
It's not that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. I just thought that was. And did you had she heard of you before?
I don't know.
I don't know. To be very honest,
I don't know.
With you.
No, so Cracker Barrel brings you together.
Cracker Barrel.
Thank you, Cracker Barrel.
And I was like, wow, do we owe Cracker Barrel?
But I loved that. So that's a brilliant example of what you've been talking about. The song, it's a different song. It sounds the same, and if you're not paying attention, think, oh, it's Jolene. Then you're like, when you see it, you realize, oh no, it's a different. The feeling of it is so much. I don't know. It seems more. I don't know what it is. The idea of just all of you on stage like that. It was a different. It becomes a kind of group experience. It becomes. It's not as sad.
Okay, it's more about the arrangement and the vocals.
No, it's more. The original is super sad. I mean, it's like. But that one, there's a kind of joyfulness that comes.
Oh, yeah, because the nostalgia of the song, maybe.
Yeah.
Has a different meaning.
You're all enjoying it. She's having so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, authentically,
that
could
be too.
Why. She's
we're
not turning
really
it off.
We're all enjoying it,
yeah. Yeah.
And we're just fangirling over her.
Yeah, her energy is she just creates this atmosphere of happiness that's, like, really amazing.
I don't know how old she is, but I don't think it matters, but like it is, she is
she's
some,
going immaculate.
That is some kind of, some kind of amazing thing
yes.
going on. What are you going to do more things like that?
Collaboration, absolutely.
So, who would you love to do? Who would you not love to do a collaboration with?
Oh man,
I mean Ariana.
I mean, yeah, we've been talking about Ariana lately. That would be so awesome. I mean, I think that we would work well with Imogen Heap. Yeah. She uses her vocals in such interesting ways, mm-hmm. and she's so incredible and creative.
Can I tell you my Imogen Heap show?
Yes, please.
This is years ago. I was at some random conference in Maine, of all places. It's Saturday night. And I realize that Imogen Heap is there. I have no idea why she was there. So I find myself at like 2 in the morning with Imogen Heap and these two other people. I have no idea who they were. We were singing George Michael songs by the water at 2 in the morning.
Hold on to that memory for a
It remains probably the greatest evening of my life.
I can't believe that. That's incredible.
It was hilarious. It was like, and her, the genuine affection she had for George Michael. And it made me think, I had sort of like, hadn't realized what incredible songs they were.
Yeah.
Until she started singing them with us. I mean, I was doing a bad job. She was doing an amazing job. But I can see, oh my God, will you please do something with Imogen?
Imogen, if you're listening.
Yeah. Will you do George Michael with Imogen?
Oh, that is a concept. Amazing. A concept.
Yeah, I was wondering if reality were not a problem, if you could go back in time or anybody. I mean, if they're vocalists purely, who would you love to work with?
Michael Jackson. Yeah,
that would be so cool.
Patsy Cline. I don't know why that was the first one.
What a great one.
Thanks. We were in country music world, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Wait, Matt, you said Michael Jackson. Which Michael Jackson song do you think is a Pentatonix?
Oh, I think, oddly enough, Human Nature would be really cool.
Yeah.
It's such a different type of song. And it's, I mean, Man in the Mirror, you know, you have all the hits. But I think that one would be a really cool arrangement if we could do it with his voice over top.
That'd be so cool.
Is there a way we could do that with his voice?
We paid a lot of money.
Can you imagine if we did like a dueling acapella thing with Jackson 5? That would be amazing.
Oh, that would be so. A medley of Jackson 5? Yeah.
I wish you'd do that anyways. Medley of Jackson 5.
I come back to this idea of this like sense of urgency. When I'm watching you all so engaged with each other, it doesn't just feel like you're performing because there is an audience there. Like it feels like you're all physically connected and would have to be physically responding in some way. Mm. I mean, you really are using your voices fully as instruments and you don't get a break the way
it's very vocal.
A lot of musicians
do. And we have to listen to each other nonstop.
Yeah.
Like, I have Mitch on my left ear and Kirstie on my right ear.
Exactly. I was wondering if you noticed the difference between when you're performing as the group versus solo, just physically how you interact.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
It is so
it's
weird.
It's so different.
Yeah.
It's
really different.
It's hard for me now to do anything without the group because it's like we're such a unit now and that's just how I performed for 6 years that I'll even sing for like 15 people at a part little jam session. And I'll be like nervous, more nervous than I would be on stage in front of 10,000 people. It's like, it's a very interesting way your body responds because you feel so lonely when you're singing by yourself now.
I was gonna say, it made me like sad because like it's so cool to play off the different energies on stage. And whether it's instruments or, you know, it's so great when it's just like us and vocals and stuff. But when you're like sitting there by yourself and if there's a track going on, you're like, where is everyone? Like, what happened?
I feel like I'm just like boring too.
Yeah.
I'll be performing by myself and I'll be like, this is not as engaging and I don't feel as confident in it. I feel like what I'm doing right now is boring to them and I don't want to bore anyone. And like also our trio when we're singing parallels, it's like such a safe space. It's like you can just like sing without like feeling. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Can I coax you into doing one last song?
Do you have a request?
Yeah. What's that? Do you have a request? Well, we were talking about Jolene.
We don't have a Dolly.
Oh, you don't?
Oh, yeah, we need Dolly.
Will you be Dolly?
Will you sing
a solo? No. Okay, we'll have to do something. You can't. Yes, we missed it. Yes, we are missing Dolly. That occurred to me.
We could do like part of That's Christmas to Me or something. Or It Won't Be Christmas when this airs.
Why don't you? Yeah, I'll let you pick something that you really love?
Can't Sleep Love, part of Can't Sleep Love, the first verse and chorus.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
We could do that.
Because that one's pretty.
So you want to just start at the beginning?
And it's original.
True.
I like how you're doing it.
That's okay. You come in at the pre-chorus?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go through the first chorus.
Okay.
Cool.
This is A flat, right?
Yeah.
I think
that's
right.
Tell me at. Should we just go right for my solo? Oh my gosh, my voice can do this right now.
And 1, 2, 3.
Oh my. That was really lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Pentatonix from GSI Studios in New York. To see when Pentatonix are in your town, check out p.t.x.official.com. And we've made a playlist of our favorite Pentatonix songs for you that you can check out at brokenrecord.com. Broken Record is produced by Justin Richmond and Jason Gambrell, with help from Mia Lobel, Jacob Smith, Julia Barton, and Jacob Weisberg. Special thanks to my co-hosts Rick Rubin and Bruce Hadlam, and my co-host this week, Daisy Rosario. Our Broken Record theme music is by Kenny Beats. This show is brought to you by Pushkin Industries. I'm Malcolm Gladwell. Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today. The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored amongst some of the most influential leaders in industry. And me, I'll be there too. Enter now at tmobile.com/unconventionalawards. See you there.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.